أخبار اليدس الأسعار من ذلكم عند يدفن البرس كالأسواق ذلكم before we start with the business of the day, with your permission, we should just deal with the letter addressed to me, which relates to our time frames. I thought it would be important that people who are more knowledgeable than me and who have experience can guide us on how we deal with that correspondence, and from AgriSA, Mrs. Harley Starkey is going to do the presentation. But I'll ask Advocate Father Merve just to deal with the correspondence before we go to the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon, members. The letter, just to put members in the picture, the letter from AgriSA was written on the 29th of November of this year, and the concern was expressed in this letter that regarding the publication of the draft bill. Now, the bill that will be presented to members today is then for members to discuss, consider, propose changes to, or accept as it is. Once members accept the bill, whether it's today or at another meeting, this bill must be published and we must call for comments. Now, in general, there is a concern about publishing over the festive season. It is not the first time that a bill will be published in November or December, on every one of those bills that we've published in November or December, a concern was raised about the festive season. And this is indeed then the concern that AgriSA is raising. And they're also saying that in addition to this timing over the Christmas period, they are of the view that the 7 weeks, because it will work out to about 7 weeks if we publish now up until the end of January, is not sufficient, and they were requesting for at least 3 months for public comment. Now, what we must keep in mind is what the Constitution requires of this committee. Now, first off, Section 59, Subsection 1A, says that the National Assembly must facilitate public involvement in the legislative and other processes of the Assembly and its committees. So it is very important to remember that this is an obligation of the National Assembly as a whole. This is then also the same requirement is placed on the National Council of Provinces in Section 72, and it reads very similar to Section 59. So the first thing that we must keep in mind is that this bill did not arise out of nowhere. There has already been extensive public consultation on the subject matter. The desirability of this bill has been extensively consulted on during the Constitutional Review Committee process. So firstly, that must be kept in mind. It is still public facilitation of public involvement. We can't just ignore that happened. It happened. There was a consultation on that. The publication of this bill and the calling for comments will thus focus on the wording that is being proposed. And for that, there is not necessary to have an extensive consultation period. It is now becoming a technical consultation type, because we are talking about the actual legislation that the committee must consider. Is this full stop in the right place? Is the wording here correct? Should we amend something else that we have overlooked in order to make explicit what is implicit? So all of these things must be kept in mind. Then when we look at the requirements for consultation specific to a constitutional amendment bill. We find that in section 74, subsection 5, which says at least 30 days before a bill amending the constitution is introduced, that bill must be published in the National Government Gazette. And in accordance with the rules and orders of the National Assembly, which actually just repeats the Constitution, the particulars of the proposed amendment for public comment. Now, we are definitely complying with Section 59. We are complying with Section 74. So what will happen is that there will be, in fact, two publications. That is what we presented to this committee when we presented on the program, and this committee adopted that program. So this committee's view is there will be a publication now in December in the Government Gazette, which is the formal requirements of Section 74, formal requirements of the National Assembly rules. That formal publication will also allow us to alert the National House of Traditional Leaders, because there will have to be classification of this legislation, and as it affects property, it would be recommended to the joint tagging mechanism that it be referred to that house, because it affects land, and also that we can forward this bill to the provincial legislatures, because that is a requirement in terms of Section 74B. And again, this period, the festive period, is why we need to do these things as soon as possible. We can't wait for 2 January to give the provincial legislatures notice. I do not think that would be fair on them. It would probably be sufficient time, but I think it would just assist them to set their program up now already for 2020 if we can notify them already in December. So what will then happen is the second publication, which is now not a requirement. So this is already going above and beyond. There will be a publication on the 6th of January, or I think the 3rd, I don't know, I think it's probably the first Monday in January, in national newspapers, further calling for comments. So in other words, there will be a formal publication in December. People can go on holiday. They don't have to worry about this bill. Coming back in January, they will then have another, I think it's just over three weeks, where they would be able to comment. The last point, Chairperson and members, we must remember that once we receive those comments, it does not mean that that there is an absolute bar against further publication for comments or a further call for comments. It depends on what happens with the comments that we receive. In fact, I think the National Health Bill had that exact thing, where there was an advert and the committee then looked at what was being received and made a different decision. So what I'm saying is that currently the program, which requires publication now in December in the Government Gazette and then in January in national papers, comply with sections 59, 72 and 74 of the Constitution. And should we come back in, I think it will be early February, and the committee decide at that point in time, no, we are uncomfortable, we want to give more time, that is always possible. But for now, we are complying, and there is no need at this point to already make a decision to extend or anything. The program can stand as it is. Thank you, Chairperson.
I didn't want us to debate this, but I don't want to suppress anybody. I see a hand. I hope there are two hands, but please, I really wanted to table this thing so that it's not just my decision, but I don't want to turn this meeting into a debate on correspondence. Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, it's not a debate on correspondence. We've had an interpretation from legal services with regard to the letter that you've received. I would go as far to say that the legal services interpretation is, I would say, mostly correct, or maybe even technically correct. But this goes beyond technically correct. I would also refer legal services to Section 57 of the Constitution, which instructs the National Assembly to have rules to do what? The National Assembly may make rules and orders concerning its business with due regard to representative and participatory democracy, accountability, transparency, and public involvement. Now, the point I would like to make is this. This is the first time that we amend the Bill of Rights since 1996. It's the first time. And we all know that South Africa basically comes to a standstill as of yesterday. The fact that we are working today is interesting, technically. So, even though legal services may be technically correct, I would argue that in terms of perceptions, the perception out there is that we are scheduling this time frame to make it as difficult as possible for members of the public to react. If it's correct or so, that's not the point. That's the perception that exists. And if there's a request to say, can we have a look at the time frame, I would suggest that we should do so and make it possible. It shouldn't have an impact on the final deadline that the committee has set itself at the end of March. But if we proceed now, it will play into the hands of those who are going to take this process to court in any case. So if you can, we can do that. I've got no problem. If you decide to do that, you've got the majority, you take that decision. All I'm saying is that to publish it and to argue and to say we've done that in the past and there are other examples, that may all be technically correct. But in terms of perceptions, I would ask and plead with the committee to take that letter seriously. There's no reason why we cannot extend and make it possible to do it not over the festive period, because we are not assisting ourselves in that process.
Thank you, Thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me start by appreciating your good sir to take this committee in confidence in terms of presenting the correspondence. That's a demonstration of acknowledging and appreciating the importance and the sensitivity of the business that's before this ad hoc committee. Okay, lift it. Okay, but I won't repeat my preamble. That's one, Chair. But also, I will say, put a rider to say, any other correspondent that will come pertaining this process, I would appreciate that we do the same, so that also all of us who are on board on your correspondence, without suggesting that we'd like to chair sitting on this side. Two, Chair, the legal services have provided us with a legal process, of course legally it's not a straight jacket, but also with the supporting evidence thereof. More above the legal services also, which I would like to add that we need to appreciate, is that we agreed on the program, which was very activity-based and very specific. That's one which we adopted. I don't want to go to say whether we need to go beyond March 2020. That one was deliberated on that one, and it can't be an issue now. But I'm just flagging it. Three, Chair, is that it's very important that you also, I would request that you respond to them, but also in a more of appreciating their issues. But also remind them in terms of the previous term, because we're not starting all over again, but we're dealing with the text, so that they appreciate. What also give me, where I'm sitting, a sense of comfort, Chair, which is my fifth point, is that in all these processes, AgriSA has been actively engaging in the process, and which means that they are lending a hand, which we really welcome that. Having said that, but they must be appreciating that there must be a start of a process and an end. Don't leave the country in anticipation, not knowing what is going to happen. And I'll say with that, Chair, it's not about the majority. We want to take all South Africans on board and take their input also very seriously. However, there's an issue that needs to be addressed, and it will be addressed, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Chair. This is a question for clarification. I would just like to know whether the legal services have in fact looked at previous judgments in terms of gazetting matters for public comment during the festive season, and because I do somehow recall that there has been, whether it was part of the judgment or an obiter, but there has been some findings or comments on asking for public comments over the festive season.
Dankie, voorzitter. Yes, Chair, in addition to what Dr. Lodret is asking, we have the benefit of the Doctors for Life Constitutional Court case, which dealt specifically with whether it is sufficient for a legislature to technically adhere to the requirements of facilitating public participation. And in that case, in fact, the court found that it is not a mere tick box exercise, but what must be determined is whether the legislature acted reasonably, and to determine whether the legislature acted reasonably, there is three questions that must be asked. Firstly, the nature of the legislation concerned, and I don't think it needs to be argued that this is important legislation. Secondly, the importance of the legislation, which then goes with number one. And thirdly, the intensity of the impact on the public. And I hope it does not need an argument to say that while we know there was extensive public participation on the desirability of the legislation, that in itself gives a clear indication that there will be a huge impact on the public. And in that sense, I think we must, as a committee, to support Dr. Mulder, be very careful to just say we're adhering to the minimum requirements. And given the fact that there is, for all intents and purposes, a shutdown of South Africa for at least the period middle December to middle January, I would think that we must not count those days in determining the period. Thank you.
Honourable Matthias.
Thank you so much, Honourable Chair. Look, we've been waiting for far too long, for 367 years, for this moment to arrive. And finally, this moment is arriving, is showing its arrival on the horizon. It will not be stopped. Now, we in the past we have expressed our discomfort with critical process of Parliament to be communicated during festive season and all of that, because the level of our people's consciousness is a bit low and all of that. If we have to do anything to deny the naysayers, to derail this process, to frustrate it on technical grounds, from where we are coming from, we would not have a problem if this process can be all the concerns that have been raised here of possible derailment and some sabotage and all of that can be taken into account, because we are almost there, and by the pace at which we are going, we are unstoppable. The Bill of Rights, if the Bill of Rights will be cited as a hindrance towards this process, let's put in process and take care in ensuring that no one derives joy out of derailment or sabotage of this process. So whatever that we do, Chair, let's just be mindful of that we've been waiting for far too long. 367 years we've been waiting. We cannot be bothered to wait for more 3 months for this process to get off the ground.
Honorable Bredenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to support the Honorable Mulder and the Honorable Horn. We're talking here about very important legislation that's going to have a massive impact on South African society as a whole, and we need to be very careful and make sure we make no mistakes. Our deadline is really self-created urgency, but that left there. There's no need to extend the deadline, but and give proper time to put comment. And I would urge this committee to show South Africa that we take our responsibility here seriously, that we take this legislation seriously, but more importantly, that we take the citizens seriously and give them proper and sufficient opportunity to comment on the bill. If we have to work a few nights extra to meet the deadline, that really doesn't matter. But to give South Africans sufficient time to study the bill, digest the bill, understand the bill, and comment on it, I think is very, very important.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I think the letter from AgriSA was addressed to me in good faith, and I think it has offered this committee an opportunity for us to remind the public that we don't want to do anything behind the backs of the people of South Africa, and therefore it was important that we reiterate what the rules of Parliament say and why we have to act as we are doing. But I think we also need to bear in mind that in a sense, this is a continuous process. It's not a new process, because this process flows from the work that was done by the Constitutional Review Committee. And even the mandate that we were given by the National Assembly refers to the work that was done by the CRL Commission. So I want to agree with Honorable Dr. Horn that I think legal services are technically right, and AgriSA has done a good job for offering us an opportunity, because they may not be the only ones who have these concerns. There may be others. So their letter has given us an opportunity to inform all South Africans why we are proceeding as we are doing. And Honorable Soma, I also agree with your comments, and I'm saying that I think the balance of evidence is such that we should proceed. Maybe we should ask the media to inform South Africans why we're doing what we're doing, because you know, we are dealing, much as Honorable Melda is right to say, it's the first time that we amend a Bill of Rights. But we are aware that the question of land is such a sensitive matter, and it may actually throw this country into a crisis, and we need to address it urgently and make sure that we make sure that there is certainty as to where South Africa is going, and because it is in the interest of all South Africans that we resolve this matter. And your presence here shows that you are determined to make sure that we resolve this matter urgently, with due regard to the rules of Parliament, as well as taking into account what our courts have said on this matter, and we highly respect the decisions of our court. So having said that, we will respond to AgriSA and also issue a statement to the public, urge the public to participate in this process, because this is their process, it's not our process. I will now ask with Mrs. Haley Starkey to present the bill, draft bill. I've also spoken to our committee secretary that maybe what we should do is that to give political parties an opportunity to consider what is being presented today, that we meet again on Thursday to engage further on the bill. Proceed.
Chairperson, sorry to interrupt you. I just want to understand, are you ruling now that we stick to the agreed previous time frame and that we do not extend as SAS requested? Is that your ruling?
Yes.
I disagree with that. Thank you.
I've come to the determination that we should not accede to that request, but that we take advantage of that request to remind the public of the urgency of the matter, and also inform them that we think we are correct in proceeding as we are doing.
Listen, I know we want to proceed. I don't want to obstruct. I just want to have some more clarity. We are now going to receive the bill for the first time, and you want to propose that we on Thursday engage further. We all know that Parliament adjourns tomorrow. So I don't know of the ruling party, but some parties won't have caucus meetings before we adjourn. Do you expect us to take positions on this bill without caucuses, or what is the process? I just want to understand that.
Chair, I think probably let's think that we're engaging on the proposed meeting. Just to remind ourselves, Chair, that we when we started this journey, we agreed that we'll do our level best to prioritize this process. And in back of my mind, the suggestion that we are making is because of that. But it becomes difficult when a proposal is put before the meeting and there's no suggestion, it's just a question. If Honorable Muda has got a different view, can he suggest, then we can apply our minds on that. But by the way, Parliament is Parliament, which is NCOP in terms of the Houses. Their business end on Friday. The caucus one, I'll behave as if I didn't hear that one because it's not on the table. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, could I try to assist? I heard what you said in terms of after we had the round discussion just now on this issue, that you said the overwhelming evidence is to your decision. I heard it differently, with all due respect. The views I heard was more an accommodating view. Nobody is saying that we should move away from the deadline that we've set ourselves for the end of March. Nobody said that. Not even Agri SA has said that. All we are saying at this stage is that the time of the year where you are now is going to create a problem. The question is it impossible to alter our program, to amend our program, so that we accommodate that without moving away from the original deadline set at the end of March? With all due respect, I have to consult with a caucus, I have to consult with a party, but you want to continue. On Thursday, I was just going to discuss, or in terms of the proposed program, do you want the committee to adopt the bill so that we can publish in terms of the current process? I cannot say yes or no. And I don't know about the ruling party. So all I'm saying, if I must make a proposal, nobody is saying that we need to move away from the end of March. We are saying, can't we just amend the program to take into consideration the reality of the Christmas and the holiday period now? And can't we do something else? As the Honourable Breitenbach correctly pointed out, if we have to sit for a week in the beginning of next year, whatever, and work on daily basis, it's not that extensive. I'm just asking.
Members, could we bear in mind that as this committee anyway, we do not have the right to produce a final bill. we just have to adopt a draft bill which must be gazetted for public comment, and the broader public is also is going to input, and then we are going to get all the inputs, we are going to engage further. So let's look at this matter as a process, and therefore let's not act as if we are expected to produce an act. We're actually just producing a bill for public comment, so the engagement will continue, and then let's leave the matter at that and not belabor it further.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. I think your input, in a way, is assisting to indicate with regard to our role. But at the same time, because we want to walk this walk together, can we plead, Chairperson, that where possible, we create a window tomorrow and meet. We are aware of the duty and the responsibility of tomorrow in Parliament, but like it is happening now, I think if we were to meet at a venue such as this one, so that should the Parliament desperately need us, we would be able to recuse ourselves and walk over there. So maybe if we were to cover everyone, we can meet tomorrow so that we are able to give members an ample chance to have a close look at this. But the role of the committee, as you put it, cannot be debated or be argued against.
The reason I suggested Thursday was to give, to create the window that you're talking about for tomorrow for the parties that may want to engage, so that they have a window tomorrow, and then on Thursday, then we meet. Let's leave it there. Thank you very much. Mrs. Stuckey.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, members. I've been given the privilege to present the first draft of the proposed Constitution 18th Amendment Bill. Members will note that on page 1, we have proposed the classification as a Section 74(2). As members are aware, there are three types of constitutional amendment bills. Section 74(2) of the Constitution says Chapter 2 may be amended by a bill passed by the National Assembly with the supporting vote of at least two-thirds of its members, and B, the National Council of Provinces with the supporting vote of at least six provinces. The amendment bill proposed amendments to Section 25, which is the Bill of Rights, and therefore falls squarely into Chapter 2 of the Constitution, and thus is a Section 74(2) bill. However, we as legal services will prepare an advice regarding the tagging to the joint tagging to the JTM as soon as the bill is ready for publication. Members will note that there is no bill number at present, but this will be allocated once the bill is ready for introduction. If you can turn to page 2. As usual, there's a general explanatory note. This is common in all amendments. Square brackets indicate the proposed omissions from existing amendments, existing enactments. Underlined words indicate insertions. We've also prepared a consolidated version for members in order to have a look at the proposed amendments as they appear within the entire Section 25. Those amendments are highlighted for members. Underneath this, you have the long title. This just provides a summary of the amendment, which is to amend the 1996 Constitution so as to provide that where land and any improvements thereon are expropriated for the purposes of land reform, the amount of compensation payable may be nil. And then we have a preamble. Now, why is there a preamble in this amendment? A preamble is an introductory written statement of facts and provides the reason for the law. An amendment bill usually does not have a preamble. and preambles of an amendment will not form part of the principal act. So the preamble here will not form part of the Constitution. However, there's no prohibition against providing a preamble in an amendment bill. In fact, constitutional amendment bills normally have preambles because it provides the context of the reason for the amendment, you know, sort of setting the scene, which is very important when it's the supreme law of the country. Members may recall that during the fifth parliament ad hoc process, Judge Albie Sachs proposed that the bill includes a preamble that shows the purpose of the amendment and the role the bill will play in the country. He suggested that the preamble should reflect the injustice of the past, but acknowledge the existing rights and the need for land reform. He also explained that the preamble would provide the courts and future generations with the background and context, which could also assist with future interpretation. We have considered all of this, and as well as the CRC report, when drafting the preamble. And we must also remember that, as this is a nation-building exercise, the amendment and the preamble will speak to this. You can turn over to page 3, which deals with the actual amendments. In drafting the amendment, legal services considered the following. We considered the reports of the Fifth Parliament ad hoc committees, the CRC report. We considered workshops. The workshop discussions included all written submissions made by various experts and those who attended the discussions. We also considered deliberations and inputs from committee members. And we had a greater discussion with the extended legal service drafting team with regard to technical points. The amendments, as members can see, has two clauses. Clause 1 deals with the actual amendment. Clause 2 provides the short title and the commencement of the bill. Clause 1 contains two amendments to existing subsections and one additional subsection. The first amendment. It is an amendment to subsection 2B, and therefore the entire subsection 2 will read as follows. Property may be expropriated only in terms of a law of general application, for a public purpose or in the public interest, and subject to compensation, the amount of which and the time and the manner of payment of which have either been agreed to by those affected or decided or approved by a court. And this is where we have inserted a new sentence. Provided that in accordance with subsection 3A, a court may, where land and any improvements thereon are expropriated for the purposes of land reform, determine that the amount of compensation is null. The second amendment is an amendment to subsection 3 so that it reads as follows. The amount of compensation as contemplated in subsection 2B and the time and the manner of any payment must be just and equitable, reflecting an equitable balance between the public interest and the interests of those affected, having regard to all relevant circumstances, including, and then follows the list of circumstances that will be considered, which is currently in the Constitution. The third amendment is an insertion of subsection 3A, which will be placed directly under the list of circumstances, and this reads as follows. National legislation must, subject to the subsections 2 and 3, set out specific circumstances where a court may determine that the amount of compensation is null. And those are the amendments. Thank you, members.
Chairperson, could you please put it on the mic?
We are dealing with the proposed formulations. So any long statements are not going to be helpful. Could I request that inputs relate to the formulation? If a member takes a view, different view on the formulation, address the formulation and not give us an oral dissertation on the formulation. Honorable on Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Dr. Mulder, Mr. Sommer,
thank you. Mr. Chair, with respect to the proposed section 3A, 3 capital A, national legislation must, subject to subsections 2 and 3, set out specific circumstances where a court may determine that the amount of compensation is nil. What would prevent us from setting out the circumstances that we have in mind here and incorporating it in this amendment with a rider, because none of us are omniscient, with a rider that the courts have a discretion, as they would in any event have. So set out the circumstances that we have in mind in this amendment with that rider, in my view, it will make this amendment more complete.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would support that. My view is that there's no reason why we need separate national legislation. There's no reason why those circumstances cannot be put into the Constitution, just as a point of departure. The second point is, this is the first time that we've seen this proposed amendment. I'm not representing myself, so I can't take a view. I'll have to consult, and I can't really participate. It's irrelevant if I think it's good or bad.
Well, thanks, Chair. If we in response to,
this process is also to empower you, so that when you consult, you know what you are consulting on. But your presence is appreciated, and we also appreciate your democratic right to consult, but we think that this will empower you to go and consult meaningfully. Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. In addition to the two inputs already made, I would also like to get feedback on the issue of whether, if the specific circumstances are not set out in the amendment, whether we won't bring into question the constitutionality of the amendment itself. As has been alluded to earlier, we are busy amending the Bill of Rights, and there's specific requirements, thresholds, in terms of support in the National Assembly when we take this to the National Assembly. Whilst if national legislation is actually going to give, to flesh out the amendment, national legislation only will need a 50% majority in both houses. So we must be very careful not to set ourselves up for a situation where the argument can be made out later that we have eroded our own Bill of Rights by not amending it to the fullest and allowing Parliament to, with a simple majority, amend the Bill of Rights for all practical purposes. In my view, so I would like to hear from Parliament's legal advisers.
Thank you, members. The Constitution is a framework legislation. We must remember that the sections in the Constitution state the principle. Examples are like Section 33, which is PAJA, and Section 32, which is access to information. You have your enabling legislation like PAJA and PAYA. The Constitution will then state the principle, and the national legislation will then give effect to that principle. Yes, we understand that it is possible to provide various factors that could be considered, but we haven't received that instruction. members or this committee needs to provide us with that instruction. And also, our instruction, our mandate is only to make explicit that which is implicit, and that's what we have done.
If I may just add to that, the main reason, as Ms. Alistaki has pointed out, why we have enabling, we have framework as our constitution and in enabling legislation, is also to allow things on the ground to happen and develop. If we list a number of factors in the constitution, we must keep in mind that if in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, that factor is no longer relevant. If I may maybe mention the concern that we have on the foreign, the treaties, the international treaties. If we have those treaties fall away because we have now terminated them and we've reached the end of that severance period, then that might become relevant if we want to add it. Then we have to amend the constitution to add. Whereas if you make this for national legislation, it is much easier and a faster process to actually make those amendments. And then just in respect of the question on the constitutionality of the amendment itself and the threshold, the subsection 3A specifically states subject to subsections 2 and 3. And the reason for that is to make it very clear that the requirements that are there for expropriation, in other words, we're talking about public purpose, public interest, determination of this compensation and the compensation itself being just and equitable, reflecting equitable balance, taking into account all of those circumstances. And then, of course, Section 36 itself, which applies to the limitation of any right that is not already limited in some extent in the Constitution. All of those principles will have to apply, or rather converse, any legislation, any national legislation will have to apply, comply with those principles. So I do not think that there's a concern about constitutionality if we do not put the factors in to this amendment. Like it was pointed out, there are many examples where that in fact is done. But on the other hand, it is not that it can't be done. And as was pointed out, we will just need then the members to give us those factors and that can then be included. Thank you, Chair.
Is it correct that we all agree that these specific circumstances should be set out, but we are really saying that setting them out inside the Constitution is not advisable for the good reasons that the parliamentary legal services are saying, because you don't want to be amending the Constitution every five years. Dr. Mulder?
Chairperson, it's exactly the opposite. It's exactly the opposite. You are dealing here with taking away people's right to property by offering them nil compensation. It's not PAYA, where you have the right information and you explain how that right should be enforced. Here is an amendment that infringes directly on the right to own property by taking it away from somebody and giving them nil compensation. To get to that nil compensation, yes, the other circumstances that are referred to in the bill, that remains in the Constitution. But you are referring now in this process to specific circumstances. At least those specific circumstances where you're going to infringe on the right to give somebody no for their property should be in the Constitution, that there should be no uncertainty. And it's not an argument to say that then we have to amend the Constitution. Yes, constitutions are living things. You have to amend the Constitution. But the specific circumstances should be so clearly set out that there's certainty. If you put that in national legislation, the next parliament will come and say, well, we've got some other circumstances. It's completely unacceptable, and I would suggest that we get a draft where we include the specific circumstances in the Constitution where you need the relevant majorities as well, that we can have a look at that. Because if you don't do that, you're expecting us now to look at something without knowing what the specific circumstances is going to be. The national legislation will one day be drafted, who knows when.
Thank you. a long-standing member of this House, would you agree that there is a process that deals with national legislation on this issue, which is running concurrently with this one, which addresses what you're saying?
Person, may I respond to your question? I understand that there's a concurrent process, but there's not currently a concurrent process because the national legislation will not come into being until the Constitution is amended, finally amended in terms of this proposal. Then only the process in terms of national legislation of the specific circumstances can get underway. You cannot expect people to give a green light and to say that the specific circumstances that are going to imply no compensation, one day we'll see what it's going to be. You can just imagine the outcry.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I fully agree with the sentiments that have been expressed right now, and I think it is quite in line with what is in the Constitution. Now, if one looks at Section 3, where there are very specific issues given or circumstances given, so it would not be strange for us to include that into the Constitution, and that it is not left to the courts to decide, or legislation rather, to decide, because that can change at any time at the will of a 50% majority. So I would fully support the fact that if one does look at something like a nil compensation, that it is very specifically stated in the Constitution what those requirements are.
Both of you have had regard to the presentation that we received from DTI, that there are international treaties that are being reviewed which may affect this matter, that if we set out the specific circumstances, we may find that the amendment of the bills require us now to come back to this matter, which means that we would have created uncertainty. So I thought that their explanation there was very persuasive. Have you had regard to that, Dr. Lodrick? Mr. Matthias?
Honorable Chairs, the amendment process of the Constitution to effect changes in Section 25 should break ranks with the current paradigm. And if it fails to break ranks, if it fails to break new grounds in facilitating a new paradigm altogether, we are merely wasting our time. And the specific circumstances that members refer to ought to be made as clear as possible to avoid uncertainty. Secondly, in making such specific circumstances clear, it must be stated categorically that the state, through its appropriate proper organs, must be empowered to make determination when compensation is decided or is determined, and make rulings and make determination at that point in time, and of course enable courts to serve as organs of final arbiters to resolve disputes at an appropriate time at the end of the process. But the state should not be emasculated. The reason why this argument has been advanced is to emasculate the state from exercising its constitutional powers given to it by the citizens. So that must not be taken away, the state's ability to act and to determine whether compensation is appropriate or not, or compensation should be determined at zero or at nil. That must not be taken away. That's the point we're making.
Honorable members, we are debating, I think, in line with the freedom of speech, let's not cast aspersions. Let's not make anybody feel intimidated. Let's just allow people to be free to say what they want to say, and let's engage. I think this is a wonderful opportunity for us all to express ourselves fully. I'm addressing all of you on this matter. Honorable Lusum.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. You know what, seated here listening to our colleagues, it sounds very convincing, Chair. That's one. But two, Chair, probably if Honorable Member can also give us examples of circumstances that he refers to, that's one. But two, also, we shouldn't lose sight that in one of our engagements on this subject matter, Chair, we did also allude to the issue of tribunal, which will make determination if the person that the land is being expropriated is not satisfied, so which can decide in terms of whether nil, zero compensation or what it may be. So I'm saying that they are putting their idea, which I share the same sentiments on the latter sentence of your input, Chair, that if they want us to put it, so they must also make those examples. But also, mind you, you cannot also be over-prescriptive in the Constitution, because there's also a property clause that speaks to that in the Constitution, and an act also that speaks to that. So I'm saying we are hearing it, but if they can give us the examples, probably then we can reflect, come back on Thursday, and then just clean it up and then move with the subject that there is.
Those who know English better than me, sometimes we'll give you a list and say the list is not exhaustive. What capacity do we have to list things in a way that it will be exhaustive? Are we not actually just there shooting our foot in the heads? Honorable Mahlatsi and Dr. Mulder. Dr. Mulder?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. No, I welcome the sentiment from my colleague of the ANC just now. I understand what she is saying. I have not applied my mind in terms of specific circumstances and the list. But I do remind myself that I think the Honourable President in Parliament, when he spoke about the whole notion of expropriation without compensation, he gave a list. And I think that list is available. Maybe we should have a look at that.
Repeat that again. Can you repeat what you said?
Repeat that, Chairperson.
Maybe something, not remember what the President said.
Well, I think, yes. Yeah. Chairperson, now the point I'm making is this. The Honourable colleague from the ANC says it's very convincing what we are arguing, that it should be clear in the Constitution, in the amendment, what the specific circumstances would be, and that it should not necessarily be in national legislation, because there are implications in that. And then she says correctly that it will assist if we could give an examples of what we mean in terms of what is proposed here, specific circumstances under which compensation could be zero. The point I'm making is I have not applied my mind in terms of those possible circumstances, but I do remember that the Honourable President himself, when he spoke in Parliament after the election, when he made the announcement that government is intending to expropriate without compensation, the President himself, on behalf of government, clearly made a list, I think three or four specific instances that he listed under which circumstances this could happen. All I'm saying is perhaps we should have a look at those proposals by the President himself and see if that is exhaustive, or if we should add some more, or if that is the way that we should go.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think we are moving quite nicely in as far as what we need to achieve. However, Honorable Soma is indicating that beyond what might have, we can't assume that members who are seated here, they share the same sentiments as the President. That's point one. Point two, they themselves, they have come up with a view that there could have been other circumstances beyond what the President might have said. If there are other issues that they would want to appear as circumstances, they should indicate so. That's what we are saying. If there are other, that's why Honorable Someone says, let's go back, consult further, come Thursday, and consolidate on this particular issue. I think we must not exhaust it further than we have at the moment. Thanks, Chair.
You don't want to give Dr. Meldon the right to quote the president and not necessarily. I think maybe he was just giving an example that the president specifies certain things, not that we are bound by the president. We are the legislative arm of parliament, but we have the right to take into account what other people say.
May I react? If the president is correct, I'll gladly quote him. But it's correct. Maybe there are some other circumstances as well. Give us time to apply our minds, and we can engage and discuss and see what needs to be put in that clause, and then where that clause should be. I'm of the view it should be in the Constitution to make it amply clear in terms of what we are doing.
Third, this session is actually empowering all of us so that from here we can go out and look at other circumstances, so that Thursday when we come, we can give more examples of what we think should be put in. Honorable Horn?
No, thank you. I just want to get back to your comment regarding the so-called inability to have what you called an exhaustive list. And earlier on you said that if we put the list into the Constitution, we might create uncertainty. But your comment that we will never be able to get to an exhaustive list and therefore we must leave it to the national legislation, that then in itself speaks to the uncertainty that will linger on if we do not list the circumstances in the Constitution. That's just as simple as it is.
Playing a devil's role to empower you to think further. So I'm not making a ruling. I don't have that authority to make a ruling on that matter. Honorable Mathatin?
No, thank you, Chair. You have covered me on that issue because I was going to raise exactly the same matter that we are agreeing, we are moving quite nicely. Can we move to the next item? Because I think we have exhausted the matter. Thanks, Chair.
Of the circumstances, we are saying that all of us have been empowered to go and think further, consult with our political parties, with our friends, and even with children, because children these days think faster than we do, listen to them, and then when we come back on Thursday, and then we can enrich the debate. We have dealt with that matter. Any other Honorable Suma?
Guidance, Chair. We have been provided with this one, which we are following. Also, this one was put before us. May we also be enlightened in the relationship of the two. And I'm trying to refresh my memory. I can't, I'm unable then to borrow from the two documents. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable. the... the first, the first document was the actual amendment bill. The second document was just something to make it easier for members to follow. It was a consolidated version to show members what the amendments will look like in the Constitution, sort of like a B bill. Okay, thanks.
I don't want to, just understand the process, but and I understand that we meet on Thursday, but some of us have different programs as well. Some members have engagement abroad where they leave in the next couple of days. I don't know if you intend to have many more meetings in the next few days. I just want to alert you to that.
The program has been fully distributed. We know what we've got to do between now and the end of March. And all members of parliament who regard this process as of national interest would really put aside holidays abroad and really make sure that we discharge our responsibility to the nation. And also that meeting on Thursday is not unreasonable if we really want to maximize participation.
Yes, thank you. This will be the last time that I say something. I just want to make it very clear for today. For today. Nobody is going abroad for holidays. I'm going on an official trip with the Deputy Minister of Finance and other senior members of Parliament to the German Parliament. So it's not holiday. All I'm saying is Thursday is fine, but after that it's going to become impossible for members to be here. I don't know if you intend to have more meetings then. That's all I'm saying.
I take the view that as Honorable Mahlatsi is saying, the way these proceedings are going, we should be able by Thursday to have a draft bill that we can gazette for future engagement, so that those who want to go abroad can go abroad knowing that the draft bill is gazetted for further engagement. Would that be fair?
Thank you, Chairperson. I said I was going to be finished now, but my colleague of the EFF said he hopes I won't come back. I'll be back.
It would seem that Honorable Mahlatsi has vindicated that you are doing very well. And then it also is a compliment to legal services that you have done very well. And you have really empowered us with food for thought. We have tomorrow and Thursday when we meet, we can get further inputs, and on the basis of those inputs, then legal services can then finalize that. But another from the chair, do we want to make the court, do we want to bureaucratize these matters and subject these matters to judicial processes, or do we want to give the court the right to review, because we know that the capacity in the court is limited. And we may have a situation where the process is delayed for another 12 years. But if the court has the right to review, that can speed up the matters, because we really want the processes to be as peaceful as possible, and courts sometimes take long to deal with matters. Can I hear someone on that matter? We want to give the courts the jurisdiction or merely the powers of review.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The courts have the right of review in any event, and there's nothing that this committee, you or anyone else, can do about it. So they have the right of review. To suggest that the courts are a bureaucracy, I think, is mildly contemptuous. I'm sure you didn't mean it, and I won't tell anyone. But the courts are certainly not the bureaucracy. The courts are there as the final arbiter of fairness and of applying the law. And to try and take them out of this process, with respect, makes very little sense. We're trying to produce a process here that is that is fair, that's in accordance with the new amendment that we're proposing. And there can be no fairer route than going the route of the courts. So a suggestion that they are the bureaucracy and the cause of some sort of trouble is, I find, mildly objectionable. But the right of review they have in any event, so that's just, you know, a sine qua non.
The greatest respect for the courts, but I said that I also want to play the devil's advocate for the purpose for the purpose of just stimulating debate so that we exhaust all the aspects that arise. Honorable Matthias?
Members will remember that we are now sitting with about more than 7,000 unresolved land claims cases before the land claims court, and that the result has resulted into the restlessness, the outcry for Parliament and government to fast track land reform and to enable government to effect land expropriation without compensation. Now, if we still have that same arrangement, which earlier on I referred to as a current paradigm, where courts delays or frustrates unintentionally to frivolous counterclaims and objections by those who want to withhold, who want to hold on the land and are not prepared to let go of the land which they themselves have acquired unlawfully through criminal means, would not break in new grounds, would not facilitating anything new, would be still be dealing with the status quo. Now, courts have a role to play as forums to mediate on disputes as final arbiters. At the end of the process, the state must still have the power and authority to ensure that land is appropriated and people are taken back to the land. We don't question the role of the courts, but must come at the end of the entire value chain. That's the point we're making.
Dr. Mulder?
Thank you, Chairperson. I've been provoked by the devil's advocate. I would without hesitation say that international best practice would be that courts adjudicate when you do expropriation. That's international best practice. If you go now further to say expropriation without compensation, I would argue even more so in terms of just and fairness. If the argument would now be to remove the role of the courts in this whole process, you'll have to remove their role from the Constitution in Section 25. Which I would argue opened a new, totally in principle different debate from where we've been up to this point. So I understand that there may be technical problems, there may be backlogs, but I would strongly argue that you cannot take the courts out of this process.
Chair, maybe firstly in response to the Honourable Matthias, I mean it's also well known that the reason for the backlog is not to be laid at the door of the courts itself. It's to be laid at the administrative deficiencies. You were well aware when you were still the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Justice that there was at first no permanent judges at the land claim courts and that the budgetary provisions was just simply lacking. So in that sense, we're once again back at that circular argument of we must now embark on expropriation without compensation because government wasted the money in the first 25 years that were budgeted for land reform. But be that as it may, I fully agree with Dr. Mulder in the sense that your argument, even if it is just to raise further debate, borders on proposing an additional amendment of the Constitution which is not within, in any event, the authority given to this committee by the House. in that to take away the role of our courts in determining compensation, apart from the fact that it's in line with the way expropriation is dealt with internationally, it's a right enshrined in our constitution, in addition to the right, or maybe in strengthening of the right to property, and it is a byproduct of the very fact that to take away rights need to be dealt with in a very specific manner constitutionally. So if this committee is to consider acting on your devil's advocate proposal, I think it will go beyond the authority it has, but it in any event will amend a further right enshrined in the Constitution and not only act upon making what is so-called implicit explicit.
Isn't it true that the executive expropriates and then the courts reviews the action of the executive? How does that amount to taking away the rights of the courts? It's not taken away because the courts don't expropriate.
No, Chair. Our constitution is very explicit that the court currently has the authority to determine compensation. That's different to reviewing. Yes, I might take the executive on review to say that the reasons you give me why you're expropriating my land is not valid reasons. That's the review. But even if the courts find that there's sufficient reasons to expropriate, the courts have the final authority in determining the compensation. And your devil advocate proposal wants to erode or take away that right I have.
So the devil has given you an opportunity to expand on the matter. Honorable
you see, Chair, everybody apparently is hiding behind the devil's advocacy as you present. But the long and short of everything, my understanding of you raising this question on the courts and whatsoever, is a simple fact that the honorable members in this committee must understand that we have been entrusted with a mammoth task. And if we are going to hide behind excuses and justifying even the injustifiable to say maybe the courts would come and cause an unnecessary delay, we must know that at the end of the day, we will be plunging this country into the abyss of the unknowns. Because you see, I believe South Africa, we have got an opportunity. The opportunity to address the redress of the past on the table, and we should not leave it to our children who may not have an opportunity to come and sit and talk over these things. So I agree, but I don't think we should say or promote or condone a situation whereby courts will come and be an excuse for what is right to be achieved. Hence, I would say, because even the issue of the courts will emanate from here. If there is anybody who will end up misleading the public outside there, it's not the public itself, but it will be ourselves, because we won't hold it back when we should be moving forward. And what I would say is, let us have one spirit of cooperation and collaboration so that we find an amicable solution together as one. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. You forgive me for my simplicity, understanding, and also following in terms of what has been presented before us. I will use this one, which is a version of of Bill B. Next. Yes, okay. Point one, Chair, or clause one, rather. I will tend to urge the committee to agree that it stays. It reads, no one may be deprived of property except in terms of the law of general application, and no law may permit arbitrary deprivation of property. That one, then we move. And I think that I've got the feeling that we all agree on that. Just to double check before I move. Clause 2 of section 25, sub 2, is the property may be expropriated in terms of for law of general application A for a purpose, for a public purpose or in the public interest. I want to confirm we are all in agreement, and I assume so, Chair, but you will give the meeting then to respond. I'm talking about, I'm reading on this one, which is the version of this one. Yes, because I mean, I don't want to go all over because I would get confused and talking about who took my land or who didn't take my land. B, Chair, subject to the compensation, comma, the amount of which and in the time and the manner of which payment of which have either been agreed by the by those affected or decided. Although on this one, which I'm going to say now, or approved by the court. But also the legal fund is in the last one. The role of the courts is not to, when somebody feel aggrieved in terms of the processes and also the amount that has would have been determined. I would revisit the discussions in our previous discussions that says that the tribunal also will then engage, because we don't feel that it would be fair for us as parliament also to do that determination. The court will have, not questioning the capacity of the court, by the way, but also to determine the amount that needs to be compensated. What do we mean on that one? So that I can be comfortable. Because if I read this one, we are in the highlighted one. I suspect that we are, okay, from your side, legal services, there's a suggestion that we delete that line or we include it. So that I can read it in its totality, if I may get that response, Chair.
Yes, observation, Honorable Suma, can you attend?
So the highlighted sections on that B-bill were inclusions. Yeah, so we haven't deleted anything.
This time not on behalf of the devil. To think that by Thursday we really can have a bill that is gazettable. Because it would seem we have exhausted all the key issues. But let me not conclusive on that and say that on Thursday we'll engage further, and that enough consultations will be done so that if we are able to reach finality on Thursday, Honorable Dr. Melda, then we'll be free to travel and we can start making our bookings immediately. Dr. Lutton?
Chairperson, I have a serious problem with this, because we rise tomorrow. There is no time for a caucus. And we will be sitting here without a mandate from our caucus deciding on what needs to be gazetted. That's really a serious problem for us.
What we could do Thursdays caucus days. We could meet in the afternoon. So, but caucus did not create as we create caucus. We could make sure that there is caucus on Thursday morning, so that in the afternoon we have meetings. I mean, if we bear in mind what the Honorable Murasaka was saying, that if we don't handle these matters urgently and seriously, we may be creating problems for posterity. So we don't want, we want our children and future generations to focus on development and not on solving problems which we were not able to solve for the past 25 years. So can we say, let's go to our chief whips and say we need caucuses on Thursday morning, and then on Thursday afternoon we want to sit here and deal with matters of national interest. Honorable Hon.
Yeah, Chair, maybe just to assist also, I really think the ANC will need a caucus because some of their members have already expressed the sentiment that they're disagreeing with their leader, the President. So they must really go to their caucus.
The good thing of being a member of the ANC, the good thing of being a member of the ANC is that you are free to disagree with anybody, but I'm not saying they said that. I didn't hear them saying that. But let's take them that they're just provoking you because they can see you have done very well. So you don't have to they're just provoking you. I don't think you said that. And,
No, Chair, I think it's important because a joke can be also be a perception outside there. That's why we didn't even go to that space, because with us, that one is very clearly. It's also within our resolutions, by the way. So that one, there's no problem with that one. But also, Chair, we are not going to be going to and forth. The issue of we have agreed whether other members were not so comfortable in terms of meeting on Thursday. And I'm suggesting that let's proceed. If there's a view that they still want to consult further, but on Thursday, Chair, we are going to be dealing with this so that we allow the due processes to unfold as agreed in terms of the program. Because members also, we must also teach ourselves to be principled. Not to take a decision and then tomorrow we change it when it suits us, depending on the subject matter. Unfortunately, this subject matter, we can't run away on it. We are on course and we are going to continue. That's all the appeal. Chair, thank you so much.
Honorable Suma, in agreement with you, whatever we agree to on Thursday is not the end of the road. We are just laying a basis for further engagement amongst ourselves and by our people. This is a process. So no one must worry if we reach agreement, whether you are there or not on Thursday, but we are laying a foundation for the continuation of this process and for continuous engagement. But I think, honorable members, you deserve this title of being honorable, the way you have done so well. do you want to make some concluding remarks? Okay. Mapula, are you covered? honorable members, I want to suggest that let's meet in the morning on Thursday. While you are still fresh, and your consultation don't have to be conclusive, because this is a process, is a continuous process, and we must keep it as democratic as possible right up to the end. Yes, thank you very much. The meeting adjourned.